We need to start deciding as a society, when do we flip from exploration to actually colonization?
Welcome to the Frontier Space Podcast, a series about how space technology, colonization, and exploration are transforming our solar system. 60 seconds in space. Researchers simulated hundreds of thousands of Jupiter's migration paths and noticed many of the models caused the eccentricity of Venus to be 44 times greater than Venus's current circular orbit. They theorized that when Venus had oceans of water on its liquid surface around 650 to 2 billion years ago, that Jupiter's gravitational pull and tidal dissipation actually dampened Venus's orbital eccentricity, which potentially caused a runaway greenhouse effect and essentially robbed our solar system's second habitable biosphere. And Sir Roger Penrose theorizes that the universe goes through cycles of death and rebirth with many big bangs in this kind of a never-ending cycle. Really excited to have today's guest, Dr. Jose Lopez, a U.S.-based researcher from Nova Southeastern and George Mason University with over 30 years of experience in molecular and evolutionary biology, who recently wrote a fascinating publication titled Space Colonization Beyond Earth with Microbes. Greetings, Jose. Really excited to have you here today on the Frontier Space Podcast.
Oh, thanks, Coleman. Nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. So Jose, your primary research interests are in molecular evolution, marine microbiology, and invertebrates and symbiosis. And then you have this one publication that really stood out, titled Inevitable Future, Space Colonization with Microbes First. Where did this idea come from, and what are your future research interests?
Yeah, that's a good question. But I chose different kind of organisms, like cell culture to start off. That's mammalian cell culture, and then for my doctorate, I moved into mammals. And did an analysis of symbiosis within cats, the movement of mitochondrial DNA within cats. And then for most of my career, I plunged into the waters and tried to apply molecular genetics to marine organisms on reefs. So corals, sponges, organisms in space. But in 2016, while I was at Nova Southeastern University in Florida, we had a visit from a former researcher who had moved to NASA and had become a director there. And she gave a lecture on the new programs I heard about already. Then there was also this movie that came out. You might have heard of it, The Martian. This was a very popular film at the time. Interesting ideas there with Matt Damon stranded on Mars and how he had to survive with various innovations. One of them was trying to get water and then planting some potatoes that he had left over. You know, he was there for, I guess, weeks or months. He had to survive. And the first thing that came into my mind there was, where are the microbial symbionts in the soil, which is actually very important for most of the plants that live on our planet. They send their roots into the soil, not just to get water, but to get minerals from the soil. And that requires this partnership with bacteria, with fungi, to enhance the uptake of minerals into the roots for the plants. So when I saw that, oh, okay, you know, that's those are those specific microbes, nitrogen fixers, mycorrhizae, those are probably missing on the Martian soil. So that was one kind of thought. And then lastly was, and it was, this was all happening about the same time. Well, first, there was also a discovery of water, frozen water on Mars. That was a discovery. And then just fortuitously, there was a snapshot of a news reel of Vice President Pence going to NASA. And he had accidentally put his hand on some equipment, although it said, do not touch, because they were really trying to keep everything sterile. And so all of these things, these ideas came kind of like churning around and was the basis of this paper. And our paper is an opinion paper mostly that you mentioned, Inevitable Journey to Mars mission, which was also one of our goals, is just to, you know, get a discussion going of what's involved for space exploration and furthermore colonization of extraterrestrial bodies beyond Earth, so that microbes are part of the part of the equation. They really should be, and for that, that's the main thing. There is the concept of symbiosis, and I've been studying, as I mentioned, symbiosis and thinking about it for since the beginning of my scientific career in the 90s. It's just that symbiosis means the living together of different organisms, and that's kind of one of the central rules of life on this planet, is that we're interdependent on each other. Different species are interdependent on each other. We depend on microbes for many things. Plants, as I mentioned, depend on microbes, fungi. You just so many ecology, for example. But what I'd like to really show, and again, this is kind of growing the past decade or so, is that living together is what's important, and coexisting. So we have microbes in our guts, for example, on our skin. We actually have microbes and bacteria everywhere on us. So we are not sterile. And yet the vast majority of bacteria in the environment are not pathogenic. That is, they do not cause disease. So 90% of them that are just there as symbionts can be either neutral, or they actually cause, they have benefits to us. So in our guts, GI tract, they'll help digest food and things that we can't digest. And then we can use those sugars and nutrients. They might even produce an antibiotic on our skin. They can maybe ward off all other pathogens, foreign pathogens that we might run into. And so there's a benefit there. So this is what we mean by symbiosis.
Awesome. Yeah. I love this vision of symbiosis and coexistence. And I think it's definitely underrated on our kind of colonize. Really interesting to read about how many millions of dollars are spent on the sterilization of spacecraft.
I don't know the exact dollar value, but I know that there's great efforts into it, and I understand the reason. I mean, I think it is a good idea, especially when we were first starting out space exploration. And I know there's a whole planetary protection policy. There's various levels of protection. And so I'm not saying get rid of that totally. So that's the other point of the paper, is we need to start deciding as a society, are, when do we flip from exploration to actually colonization, which is one of the goals of NASA and science at some point. So if you make that commitment to colonize, then we should do it in a rational way.
Yeah, and that was one of the main points in your paper, and I wholeheartedly agree with you that the colonization of celestial bodies should be the primary goal on the horizon throughout the mission policy and financial side of things, rather than exploration focused.
Yes. And we don't have to tiptoe around it at some point. I mean, right now we're being careful, because once we decide to colonize, we will bring Mike, how do we go about that? And it's probably easier to do the experiments on this planet and mimic what's on Mars, right, than actually doing experiments there. So it's going to take, and that could be very expensive. So that's the thing. That was what we were kind of really pushing, is the science agencies should really look into mesocosms and simulations of trying to find the best microbes to bring, maybe something that would produce an oxygen atmosphere. Because as we know, Mars is mostly carbon dioxide, and it would only really support an anaerobic type of organism at this point. Whereas we know that microbes help produce the oxygen atmosphere that we breathe in now, 20% oxygen. A lot of it's just produced by photosynthesis and microbial activity. So we would need them around there to actually help in terms of producing an atmosphere that was conducive to us. So we need experimentation here to possibly pick the microbes, to filter out the ones that may be more dangerous that we wouldn't want to bring to Mars.
Yeah, you recommended simulations with extremophiles and spore formers and maybe some kind of specific Gaian microbiomes for simulations here on Earth. But you also mentioned cyanobacteria and how they've provided most of the oxygen that we breathe now and have been breathing with life on Earth for the past 2 billion years.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the current understanding, because some of the oldest fossils or bacterial fossils are from cyanobacteria. They're called stromatolites, and you can find them in the Bahamas, in shallow waters. Basically bacteria don't leave very good fossils, but for some reason these did. And their evidence of their longevity, and then what cyanobacteria do is they photosynthesize. They're able to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and then convert that into glucose and carbohydrates. And in the process, they give off oxygen. So this is a well-known event in geology, stating that around 2-3 billion years ago, the Earth had a much different atmosphere, much less oxygen, but through the action of these microorganisms, which were really the only organisms alive for those billion years or so, they changed the atmosphere. So I know it's kind of far-fetched to think, we're going to wait around for if we brought our own microbes or cyanobacteria to Mars. It's going to be a long wait to get the oxygen, but maybe it might be a way to speed things up and in some way to quickly convert the carbon dioxide in that atmosphere to something breathable.
And you also mentioned another great idea of screening potentially hardy microbial candidates and their toxic and lethal genes to survive the 17 or so biocidal factors present on the Martian surface.
Right. There again, it's going to be possible to screen bacteria for these toxin genes, pathogenic islands, they're called. So they carry these usually very mobile genetic elements. And it's not going to be easy. And there's could always be some species that slips through. But we could maybe develop a way to screen and try to keep as many detrimental species out of our mix as well. The thing about bacteria and microbes is that they live in communities, much like we do. So there's a diversity of them. And that's another rule in nature, is that monoculture, kind of things that are homogeneous, just really doesn't happen in nature. You pick up a gram of soil, or say a quarter of a teaspoon of soil from anywhere, you don't have just one species in that soil. You've got thousands. This is one of the areas that we study routinely in my lab, using genetics to look at the diversity in different habitats. So what we do in the lab, we grow up a single species on a petri dish. That's very artificial. That's not nature. We do it so that we can kind of reduce, and it's easier to study one species at a time, like Bacillus or E. coli. But in nature, for them to function, they're interacting. And it's a plurality. There's so much diversity in the soil, in all these habitats, at the microbial level, at the higher levels too.
Our next question is, Jose, I was wondering, what are the core technologies and innovations to support the colonization of Mars and with microbes?
Try to isolate and study in detail, or maybe do some genetic engineering to fashion some of the better types of metabolic pathways, which would be beneficial to us. So we can move genes around in a genome. There's even possibilities of constructing an artificial microbial genome. That's been done by Craig Venter's group. And we could put these into simulations and environments that are closest to Mars-like atmosphere. That would be one way to do. Anyhow, that's not trivial.
Yeah, no, it sounds like the beginning of some kind of Mars simulation chamber.
Yeah, kind of like the biosphere. Heard of that? These biosphere components. They are thinking about bringing, this latest rover wants to bring back Martian soil and Martian rocks. So then we would be able to see what the what some minerals and components are there. We might find something very unusual in the components, so those can be tested and see how our life forms and microbes react to that. Yeah, you mentioned different tools. So this brings the idea of terraforming, which was kind of first introduced by Carl Sagan. And, he can go back to some of those ideas too, is that we might have to develop new tools to make a foreign area hospitable to us. But it's hard. Again, just like
You mentioned this concept of interplanetary microbiome engineering, or IME. I was wondering how we could begin to better improve and adapt the microbial communities on Mars, or those that will be there?
Yeah, I think most organisms that we know of are, the way we understand evolution on this planet is by natural selection. So we would, we're just within those, that paradigm, basically, and we could expose it to, you know, different types of selective factors. As I mentioned, UV exposure, for example, or temperature. And we would just have to see how bacterial isolate or a distinct community would respond to these pressures, evolutionary pressures.
Yeah, you mentioned sequencing techniques and the development of development in DNA, RNA, and protein identification has come a long way, and it was also really interesting to hear that half of the DNA sequenced in New York City is unknown. That's really surprising. I was also listening to a good talk by Professor Chris Mason about nanopore sequencers and how our DNA create electrical currents and sound waves, and how we can match these different microbial species with the frequencies of the DNA. And he compared them to be entire symphonies.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I kind of heard of that.
Yeah, and I'm also interested in this, the symbiosis between technology and microbes and biology that would be beneficial toward the colonization of celestial bodies. And in particular, I was wondering how nanotechnology could actually improve this sort of interplanetary microbial engineering.
Yeah, I think we can probably harness more and more microbes to produce products for us. The more we know about their gene sequences, they can be engineered to produce products or generate current, as you mentioned, and hopefully they can engineer to be sustainable, renewable, and safe. You know, which is the kind of underlying thing is let's keep everything safe. So I think there is potential there. We have so much to learn about microbes here. We're just scratching the surface. We're kind of past what they say the golden age of microbiology, but maybe we still are, because we can't grow more than 10% of what's out in nature. And all the microbes, bacteria, fungi, they're out there in these habitats, and we just don't have the knowledge to get enough material because we don't know enough about them. So that's a big hurdle right there, what we still have not overcome. And until we do, we use genetics to try to get an idea of the diversity. But that's going to be a big kind of goal, I think. And this could be a part of the plan about trying to culture the best microbes to pioneer and bring with us. But we have to grow them first. So, experiment with them in these kind of space farms or biospheres.
Excellent. Yeah. And then after we grow them, we could consider thrusting them forward on $1,000 sub 100-gram carbon foam spacecraft that could reach Mars within a few weeks and dispense of the beneficial microbes.
Yeah, that was amazing to hear about that.
Yeah,
weeks. So these were kind of setting our kind of organic bombs out there, right? Send them.
Something like that.
Yeah, like the Genesis Project from Star Trek.
Yeah. I was also thinking, if SpaceX is not planning to carry any microbial testing for their 2022 cargo mission with Starship or in 2024, we could include microbial testing and research on their mission and Starship as well.
Yeah. Do you know if they're going to, you say, or because I have not been following procedures.
It sounds like they're still working things out, but that's definitely an area of improvement. If you or anyone would be interested in,
yeah, if you can get them in touch with us, we would definitely be interested in helping out and looking at those possibilities, testing whatever they think is useful to carry this out. Microbial missions to Mars.
Exciting. But I do believe there could be a serious research opportunity, and do let us know the next time you're in the DC area. We'd love to meet up.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do. I don't have anything planned right now. Travel's a little low.
Gotcha.
again, let's keep in touch.
Looking forward to it.